Crossing Broadcast. Good morning. Happy Monday. How we feeling out there? What a great day to be a Philly sports fan. What a great day to be a fan of the NFL. A lot of rule changes coming in. Craig and I had a lot of fun as we were putting the show sheet together. And when I say we put the show sheet together, I mean I threw some stuff at Craig and said, I guess we're going to talk about this today. But not we, me. Because Craig's on the other side of the glass and he rarely speaks. His cat is currently walking across his keyboard. It's going to be a great day. A lot to get into. And I put some stuff out there on the Twitterverse because I wanted to make sure that I was keeping track of the things that we needed to talk about today. But there's a lot. There were a lot of things going on in Philly sports this weekend. But before we dive into them, I do want to get to a couple of the rule changes that have come across in the last hour in the NFL. Craig, if you can pull up the first one that I sent you over in another chat, if you have it. If you do, cool. If you don't, I'm just going to sit here and trash talk you until you do. But there were a couple of different rule changes that came out. Of course, the Eagles have once again proposed that the 4th-and-20 alternative instead of the onside kick, that did not pass. So I guess the onside kick is going to remain in place again. The Eagles' very creative proposal once again dies on the vine. Will the UFL pick it up? I guess we'll see. Is there a chance? Is anybody excited about the possibility of a 4th-and-20? Does that do it for you? Does that excite you? And then there's another one, Craig, if you want to bring that one up as well, because there's another very interesting one, another rule change that came across. The NFL has approved giving teams a third challenge if they get one of the first two correct. So no longer do you have to get both of them right. Getting one right is enough in the NFL. You hit 50%, and all of a sudden, that's just fine for the NFL. So that's a thing. That has happened. All right. If there's any other rule change that you see out there, all of you joining us live here on Twitter, on Facebook, and on YouTube, by all means, drop them in the comments below. If you're watching on Facebook, we love you and appreciate you, but please move over to YouTube. If you're joining us on Twitter, we love and appreciate you as well. You are living on a very wild platform, X. Head over to YouTube. Like the video, share the video, subscribe. Subscribe to Crossing Broad's YouTube channel if you haven't done so already. Kyle Pagan doing the Lord's work. Craig, can you pull up Pagan's announcement? Because it's a really good one. Pagan is out there causing mayhem. He's bound to piss off the Phillies with this one. Just when you thought Pagan hadn't had enough grandstanding, he one-ups himself again. He is bringing back Dollar Dog Night. Now, I know he ran into a logistical issue where he didn't have a grill anymore. And I'm assuming that since he put out a new announcement, a video, that he's bringing back Dollar Dog Night. So slide down there, Craig. Let's pull up the video. Let's get the guy who hosted this show for a good long while to tell people what's going on April 2nd.
My fellow Philadelphians, tonight I want to talk to you on a subject of deep concern to all Philadelphians and to many people in all parts of the world. Dollar Dog Night is back. Next Tuesday, April 2nd, yes, the same day the Phillies are putting on one of the worst promotions of all time, BOGO Night, we will be doing Dollar Dog Night in Lot G of the Wells Fargo Center at 5 p.m. The best part about it, all the proceeds, all the dogs we sell, money is going right over to Phil Abundance. Nothing's going in my pocket. Nothing's going in Crossing Broad's pocket. And you're probably thinking, hey, Kyle, I'd love to come down, but I don't want to support the Phillies. I don't want to support BOGO Night. I don't blame you. Good news is there's a Sixers game, too. They're playing the Thunder, number one in the West. Tickets are pretty cheap. Go get those. One rule I have, no throwing dogs. No need to give these people any ammo. Everyone's invited except John Weber, and we are going to raise money for charity, have fun, eat some dogs, and let the Phillies know how much we love Dollar Dog Night and how much they royally messed up. 5 p.m., April 2nd, Lot G. I'll see you there. Dollar Dog Night. People said it was dead. It's never been more alive.
Wow. Kyle Pagan doing the Lord's work, bringing back Dollar Dog Night. How long until the Phillies shut that one down? Now, technically, it's in a different parking lot. It's not one of their parking lots, which, by the way, are the parking lots going to exist after the Phillies and Comcast Spectacor put together that new development in the sports complex? Remains to be seen. Will Pagan get away with Dollar Dog Night or not? 610. By the way, For those, I think somebody might have caught this on the beginning, the Spanish intro. Nico says, how about the Americans last night? Of course, if you were following along, which many of you probably were not, the U.S. men's national team took down Mexico by the all-too-famous score of 2-0. So there you go. The rustache is here. It just so happens that the rustache also lends to a little bit of racial ambiguity on this program. So big win for the Americans last night. All right. Another thing that obviously has to get noted from that video, which I'm glad Connor pointed out on YouTube, still no wall art on Pagan's wall after all this time away from hosting this show. And that's a violation. I think it's a damn sure a violation at this point. I don't know what we're going to do. I know Pagan makes enough money to be able to at least get a command hook and put that up in his house. And yet he hasn't done it. It's a violation. It's very upsetting. All right. I want to get to a few of the things going on. And I have to declare, I'm not declaring war on a place that I love, okay? I'd be very, very clear. I'm not declaring war on them, but I'm disappointed. I had something really bad happen this weekend, something that has become something of like a monthly pilgrimage for me that is now probably put in jeopardy because I'm not happy with something that happened over the weekend. Do I get to it now? Do I go to it? Let me know in the comments if I should go to my thing that I'm upset about or if we should dive into the sports. Probably should dive into the sports because we started with Pagan and Dollar Dog Night. But I have to tell you that I am genuinely upset about something that happened this weekend. And I'm not sure if I'm out of line for feeling the way that I feel. I don't think I'm out of line for feeling how I feel. But you can let me know in the comments below. I'll go to it really quick. I'm wearing a shirt right now that my wife got me for Christmas. And it's a La Colombe shirt. As you can see, La Colombe. An unofficial sponsor. They're not a sponsor. They should. I don't know why they don't sponsor Crossing Broad. I think it's because Kincaid is too lazy to get a sponsor. But La Colombe should be sponsoring Crossing Broadcast. It certainly should be sponsoring Snow the Goalie, the Only Flyers podcast, is the official coffee of Snow the Goalie. But I digress. A really awful thing happened this weekend. It actually happened yesterday. I was like, you know what? I have a little bit of extra time before I go down to Wells Fargo Center. And I was like, I'm going to go down. And on my way, on my hour whatever commute from where I live down to Wells Fargo Center, I'm going to stop in Berwyn and I'm going to go to La Colombe because I want the draft latte, the oat milk draft latte. It's my jam, right? And when I go in, there's always one thing I get. It's on the shelf. They have the little pallet, like the 9-pack or the 12-pack of the canned oat milk lattes. And I love La Colombe's draft lattes. I'm a sucker for them. If it weren't for the fact that La Colombe is like 35 minutes from my house, I'd probably be there once or twice a week. But anyway, it's a monthly thing. I usually go in, I find a nice seasonal 9-pack or 12-pack of the canned coffees, and I take them home, and I put them in my basement fridge down here, which is my like unofficial basement hideaway, the things that I don't want the kids to get to. They go in the fridge. I have kids home right now from spring break. They're going to hear this through the vent and know that there are special treats in the downstairs fridge. That's not great for me. I just outed myself. Not good. But I always stow away my coffees in that fridge. And so I go into La Colombe on Sunday and the shelf is empty. And I think, oh, well, it's a Sunday. It's about an hour-ish before close. Obviously, this is my fault. They probably have them in the back. I don't want to burden anyone. And so I ask really quickly, hey, do you guys have any of them? Do you have any of the pallets? Because I was going to go pick up the salted caramel oat milk draft lattes because they're fantastic. And the guy looks at me and he says, we don't sell them anymore. We don't sell the pallets anymore. It was the most painful, upsetting thing that I have had happen to me in a long time. And I feel personally attacked in that moment. And I still feel that way today, that La Colombe isn't selling the pallets anymore. It makes me genuinely sad. And I'm not going to demand that they rectify the situation, but I'm going to kind of demand that they rectify the situation. I'm not going to go to war here. Remember, La Colombe got acquired by Chobani. And I was like, oh, good. I guess Chobani's going to be the official oat milk provider as they're making some of the stuff. I'm like, I like me some Chobani. I love me some La Colombe. It's going to be great, except now we're talking about no pallets being sold, and it made me very sad, And so La Colombe, I know that you're sitting out there. I know that you're listening, or somebody will get this to you. Please fix the situation. And if nothing else, send me a pallet just as a general, you know, loyalty thing. All right, let's get a sponsorship here for Crossing Broadcast. Let's get a sponsorship for Snow the Goalie, the only Flyers podcast as the Flyers prepare for the playoffs. Let's get this one taken care of, okay? Pagan's out trying to raise money for Phil Abundance. I'm just trying to raise some coffee for my own stomach, okay? We're both doing the Lord's work. Okay, let's move on to the sports stuff because I'm really upset, but I'm getting over it. I've gotten past it, but I do have a coffee this morning, and it's not a La Colombe coffee. It's not a Trev latte. Missing out on the business, guys. I'm just one person, but I'm wearing the merch, touting the product. All right, let's go to some of the Philly stuff because that's really what we're here for. One really, I guess, important-ish note, if you're excited about the Philly season, which, by God, we're almost at opening day. Taijuan Walker hurt. Taijuan Walker will not start the season. Not ideal. Your fifth starter. A guy that you paid a lot of money to last year, something that I think people were hoping for a bounce back season, a guy who was obviously very upset last postseason that he wasn't relied on, that he wasn't given starts down the stretch, that he wasn't given starts in the postseason in a meaningful way, thought that because of the contract that he had, and if you believed in me enough to give me that contract, I belong in the rotation, I belong in the World Series, or in the NLCS, I belong in the playoffs, I belong. We're not going to see the redemption tour from Taijuan Walker, at least to start the season. Now, does it really change much for the Phillies? Probably not. Over the course of a season, it maybe will. Remember, he was absolutely atrocious in the first inning of games last year. But here you go. Oh, I love that Craig pulled up a Marcus Hayes tweet. Ford is here, calls me white Marcus Hayes. There's Marcus Hayes. Marcus Hayes has a mustache there. I have a mustache here. Maybe we're related. Phillies president Dave Dombrowski said that even with the injury to Taijuan Walker, the team isn't actively seeking free agents. Jordan Montgomery comes to mind. Look, we've been over this a few times. Ant Sanfoni was on the show last week talking about the fact that it's very unlikely that they would have gone after Montgomery because of the tax implications. Unlike a Blake Snell, there wouldn't have been massive draft compensation to have to send back to his last team. I still think that they're going to be involved in some way, shape, or form closer to the deadline. I do think that they're ultimately going to want to pick up a guy that can slot into like a number two role, a number three role, but like somebody who's number two in the rotation kind of talent. Because ultimately, that's what's going to matter in the postseason. What you do with the fifth starter, I don't think really does matter that much. Now, if you want to make the case that from the get-go, your idea is this is going to be the year, we're going to get off to a hotter start. We're not going to have a terrible start to the season. We're going to remain competitive with the Braves from opening day through the entirety of the season. All right, well, then maybe losing Taijuan Walker does hurt your chances of doing that. I guess my only question is what they can do short term. There are guys that they can slot in. And over on Crossed Up, I know that last week Bob and Ant were kind of going over some of those options. So I guess that, like, conceptually, it's a bummer of an injury, and if you were a big believer, if you're buying all the stock in the Taijuan Walker redemption tour, the revenge tour, you're going to have to wait a little bit, which is no bueno. I see that in the comments now, people are, oh, we have an update that Trump only has to pay $175 million now. I don't remember what that was before. I think it was a lot more than that. Now it's down to $175. Wow. Wow. It's a great day, I guess, apparently. I don't know. Not my money. Let's get to something that actually does matter, and it's something that was really, really big this weekend. There were a few things that happened this weekend that were massive. Craig, I want you to show everybody what another owner in the NFC East was busy working on this weekend. You know, while Jeffrey Lurie is trying to build a contender or give Howie Roseman the tools to build a contender, Jerry Jones, can we blow that one up there a little bit, Craigles? So people, it's gone. It was there, and now it's gone. Craigle's computer maybe just died. Who knows? Who's to say? Jerry Jones has his notepad in front of him. Now, if Craig uses, oh, I see why, because Craig's cat's on the keyboard. As he zooms in there, you can see what Jerry Jones is working on. Some scribbles. Jerry Jones. Why don't the Cowboys compete? Why don't the Cowboys perform in the playoffs? Why do the Cowboys have a hard time still attracting free agents? I don't know. Here's Jerry Jones walking around meetings with a notepad, doing the ultimate slacker move. And the worst part here too, Craig, is like, based on what we are able to zoom in on, I can't even tell if there are things that he just crossed off. Like, he didn't want to give up trade secrets. It legitimately looks like he was just scribbling. Now look, many of you, and I'm sure that many of you were like this, in school, trying to stay busy, do little doodles, do some little squiggle marks, make it look like you're writing so your teacher doesn't call you out from the front of the room to check in and see how that writing prompt is going that they've given you 3 weeks on and you still haven't started it. Not that I would know anything about that. Jerry Jones, not ideal. Cowboys in the mud. You hate to see it. Absolutely hate to see it. Oh, there we go. Craig going really in close for us. I can't make out any writing. I can't make out any letters. It does genuinely look like scribbles. So this is your number one investigative podcast, Crossing Broadcast. We bring you the hard-hitting news. We report, you decide. I think that's what Kincaid says on Thursdays. I think. Probably something like that. All right, let's get into the biggest event from, what's this, half of your students probably had pages that look like in school, says Ian Johnson. Let me say, I'm going to tell you a little teacher story. Can I tell a teacher story quick? Is that okay? Of course it is. My show. I don't give a shit. At the end of my teaching tenure, before I left to come work for Crossing Broad and the parent company, I would give these assignments. And when I was a first-year teacher, I didn't let kids use computers at all because I was like, well, they're just going to like screw around the whole time. They're not going to work. So I would have it at the end of class. You'd have to bring up your notebook. And if you're working on a group project, group presentation, you had to bring up to the front of the room, show me with your notebook, I'd initial it, I'd make a note, I'd mark it off, you'd get points in the grading system. And it's pretty much like, if you had a pulse and you actively worked on what you're supposed to, you got points. What happened was over time it became, oh no, we have to get more progressive, we have to do more with computers. Let them collaborate on a Google Doc, because that way, if Johnny is home sick, he can still be part of the discussion with his group. Yeah, let's do that. I can't tell you how many times I'd go into these like shared documents, and the rule number one, everybody had to make sure they shared the document with me from the start. And if you didn't, you didn't get points because I knew you're full of shit. Sorry, surprise. I would, like, without fail, we would get to like the 1 week part point. I'd have like the checkpoints. You had to do X, Y, Z to get your points for the week. Great. I would have half the class would be doing what they were supposed to. They'd have made the progress they were supposed to. You'd have like a quarter of the class was like close, and then a quarter of the class is like, you just actively know, didn't give a shit. They weren't doing anything. But because of the climate of education, it was like, well, you have to make sure that you're really paying attention to some of the signs that there could be real concerns. You don't know what children are going through in their daily lives that could be preventing them from fucking doing anything for 2 weeks. You just don't know. You just don't know.
So we'd get to the end, and then magically you would have some of these kids that like haven't worked on anything for 2 weeks, 3 weeks. They haven't provided you anything. All of a sudden they'd put together this beautiful PowerPoint presentation about the city of Sevilla, and they would have all of these just great details. And you'd say, wow, I wonder where this came from. And then you would run it through a reverse engine, and it's like they found a presentation online. They stole all of it, and they put up, and then you have to contact parents. It's a whole thing. It's a big thing. Teaching's a lot of fun, guys. If you are an education major right now, let me tell you, teaching's great. A lot of fun. Great stuff. Everybody loves teaching. It's fantastic. Okay, let's move on. I'm getting post-traumatic teacher disorder right now. It's fine. Some kids are great. Some students are great. Some, not so much. All right, let's go to what is this? Oh, Ian Johnston, you got to one of the other things I wanted to talk to. It's a good transition. I'm always going to rely on people. Ian said, would still rather listen to Russ on an hour of teacher stories rather than cuz. Well, for those who haven't seen, we've got, and he also dropped this one too. Would rather listen to an hour of Ford Celtics takes than Mikey Miss. All right, so let's go to the 97.5 castoffs. One is apparently going back to 97.5, allegedly, and one is apparently going, well, we know that he's going elsewhere, and he's finally going to get to debut. Big news! Big news, everybody. So Mike Missanelli acknowledged on Twitter that he has been in conversations. There have been conversations with 97.5 The Fanatic in what is probably the least shocking development to happen in a while. New program director takes a look at the landscape of the station, takes a look at the lineup, says this isn't working, we're getting our doors blown off, reconfigures everything, changes the morning show, puts Sal Chunas with Kincaid. I have not listened to it since the first day. I would love to know from people who may have listened, but that first day, I think we talked about this last week, it sounded like Sal Chunas was driving that show. If you've been listening to the morning show, please, by all means, let me know in the comments what you think. If it's still that way, if they've changed it up at all. But they went without the morning show. Bob Cooney moved to middays, which is interesting. Bob Cooney's fine. Perfectly acceptable guy. Not the guy who drives the show. So we'll see if this thing comes to fruition with Missanelli in the middays. And then the best show ever in the afternoon remains untouched because it is absolute ratings gold, and there's absolutely no reason to ever try to be competitive in the afternoons if you are Beasley, apparently. So that happens. Missanelli apparently still in talks to go to middays. Would be a very smart hire for the Fanatic. Happens potentially in an election year. A little bit questionable there. Some might say, some might not, but still an interesting thing. I want to know from people if you actively want to have Mike Missanelli back on the airwaves. My question, and I don't have the answer to it, and we don't really have a way to have an answer to it unless we reached out to Bet Rivers and we're like really, really friendly with Bet Rivers about getting podcast metrics. But like, when Mike Missanelli left 97.5, did you tune into his podcast? Because that to me is interesting, because that to me tells us if the other thing is going to have success and if the other guy might have some success. Because while Mike Missanelli went off and started doing a podcast, Anthony Gargano sort of left 97.5, ended up embroiled in a bit of a scandal between All City, PHLY, trying to bring him on. There were accusations of trying to poach talent from the station. It just so happened that a bunch of 97.5 people either left or were in the process of leaving for PHLY. But Gargano has this non-compete ready to expire, and he put out on Twitter today that he's going to be doing his show starting Thursday at 9 a.m. Now, I'm interested because, again, I think we talked about this with Anthony last Monday, but I am interested to see what the clientele for this is. I'm interested to see what the demographic data for this show is, because I still have a hard time believing you're going to get a significant portion of his loyal following to break their habitual consumption of sports radio by cutting ties with the Fanatic or cutting ties with WIP to go to his new show. And I could be wrong. It's entirely possible that they will. But like, there's also a good chance that like maybe it'll connect better with a younger audience. Like maybe that's the point, is that Gargano is going to be kind of like your fun uncle. And they're going to try to reach out to the younger demo who's like a little bit more tech literate, a little bit more cord cutter, a little bit more podcast over radio. And I'm going to be interested to see, because unlike with Missanelli and his podcast, Gargano going to PHLY, we're all going to actively be able to see day in and day out what those viewer numbers are, what the concurrent viewer numbers are. We're going to be able to see what the total number of viewers are. There's another way to pull some other data from a couple of like metrics analyzers. It's going to be interesting to see what that show looks like and how it competes. Now, I'm sure that the folks over at All City will make the case that like, well, there's also going to be the podcast feed. People are going to listen to it. But ultimately, Philly Sports Talk Radio, and I would love to know from people in the comments on YouTube and on Twitter and on wherever the hell, Facebook. I want to know from you, do you believe that like, listening to Philly Sports Radio, a show that's done radio style, is that something you're interested in listening to after the fact? Like, if we do this show, there is a certain live element to it where, like, my goal is to always bring as many of the comments as we can on screen, and that's fun. And then the people who listen in the podcast feed try to read them off. You kind of feel like maybe in the moment you listen for a 40-minute show and you say, all right, I kind of felt like I understood what was going on in the moment. But like, if you're 2 days down the line, are you going to then go back and listen? I don't know how long the show is going to be. I'm going to assume 3 hours. Are you going to go back and listen to 6 hours if it's built up in your podcast feed? Like, I actually do wonder. I don't think I would. There are a lot of shows that I listen to, like even a Bill Simmons show, which Bill Simmons podcast, I can listen to two or three episodes in a row, but there is a timeliness to it that if I see he's got a really good guest on, I didn't get to the show, and then like two-thirds of the episode is about like NBA trends from like a week and a half ago, well, I'm skipping that part of the show. I'll still listen to that guest. I'm interested to see how this is going to work out. I'm really interested. So Rico says no. Rico says, like, would not go back and listen to 6 hours if it's built up. This is an interesting one, too, from Ian. How long until podcasts go full circle and radio shows just rent airtime and put podcasts on radio? I think it's a really good point. I'm gonna pull back the curtain on a couple of things here, okay? Like, because I think it's a perfectly reasonable question. And I think it's something that, like, is probably worth repeating. And again, it's like, it's part of what my frustration is, I think, with like what 97.5 is. Because if you go to the playbook of Eric Bischoff, right? Good old WCW. Eric Bischoff, 83 weeks. You've got to be different than, you've got to be less than, or you've got to be another than. Like, there's different than, there's less than, and like the idea is you have to find something that you can differentiate yourself from the rest of the market. And if you're going to try to go head-to-head, and I saw Kevin put a clip out from Thursday's show, if you're going to try to establish yourself as an industry competitor, but you're going to try to beat the incumbent, or you're going to try to beat the bigger dog by trying to do the same thing at a lesser version, it's not going to work. You won't win. And I think that for a long time, that's kind of what 97.5's done. They've been trying to beat WIP at playing the Eagles game. They've been trying to beat WIP at the Phillies game. Well, the rights to those teams belong at the other station. And clearly, WIP has identified that the model that works is have a former Eagles player in the co-host seat, put one of your more dynamic hosts to drive the show, and like it's worked for them. And they talk Eagles, 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 but it works. And if it didn't work, they would lose in the ratings books and they would change things up, but it works. If you're going to keep trying to go toe-to-toe with them, you're not going to win. Now, Missinelli might have a chance. Missinelli, just by name alone and by his following, and there's going to certainly be like that little bell curve. There's going to be that spike of interest in listening to see if he's willing to play ball. Is he going to? Some people think he needs to atone because he's been a little bit critical of the station after the fact, after leaving. Like, there are a lot of different things at play there. But like, for the most part, I genuinely think that like that question that Ian asks is a fair one. Like, why hasn't 97.5 tried to come up with partnerships with podcasts, with local podcasts, and use those shows on the weekend? That's it. Like, if you have a successful Sixers podcast and the rights to the Sixers are on your station, why aren't you trying to partner with a Sixers podcast? I get it. Rights to Ricky Sanchez is by far the most successful Sixers podcast in the city, not even close. And it just so happens that it's hosted by Spike Eskin, who's an afternoon host, who was the program director at WIP. I get it. You mean to tell me there's not another Sixers podcast in the city that 97.5 could partner with and give an hour to on the weekends, or give 2 hours to on the weekends? Seriously? Like, that doesn't exist? That's not a thing? Really? The Flyers, right? You have the right to the Flyers games. There's nothing being done at the station to try to promote that team. It's like a slam dunk on the after, like on the weekends, give an hour slot, give a 2 hour slot to a show that could talk about the Flyers. They don't do it. They try to go head to head with Glenn Macnow. That doesn't work. That's never going to work. When Macnow decides to retire, maybe there will be a little bit of a gap. Like, maybe you'll be able to kind of find a soft spot in the afternoon lineup or the morning lineup or whatever it is on the weekend. But like, they keep bashing their head against the wall and wondering why it doesn't work. Maybe they don't care. Maybe advertising revenue to them just doesn't matter on the weekend. I don't get it. To me, that's what you do. Come up with a few partnerships with podcasts, get those people, cultivate some potential hosts that can become part of your pipeline, that when you have people that decide to depart the station, you bring them in and they are ready and they're somewhat seasoned and they're able to kind of assume the role of a co-host or maybe even to go into a full-time hosting role. 97.5 has not done that for a decade. It makes no sense. And by the way, if you're going to try to tell me that, like, hey, there are no good Eagles podcasts that they could try to partner with, there are no good Sixers podcasts, there are no good Flyers podcasts, there are no good Phillies podcasts that they can try to partner with, I don't know what we're doing here. I genuinely don't. I have no clue. It makes no sense to me. I don't understand their business model. Ian, I think it's a perfectly fair question. I think it's a good one. And he also notes here that the PHLY partnership with 97.5 was a slam dunk before the Gargano argument. There's a chance. Like, there, I think Kincaid actually reported this at one point on Crossing Broad, but, like, the idea was, I think once it kind of became a little bit more well-known that Gargano was kind of building this squad and that they may or may not have been poaching some 97.5 people and that there were a few other names that were being bantied about that ultimately decided to stay at the station, there was, like, a potential, or there was at least an offering of the idea of trying to put together a content partnership. Maybe you'd have some written stuff. Maybe you would leverage some of the hosts and some of the writers at PHLY on 97.5. And instead, it went the exact opposite direction. Ant, I think, actually brought this up last week. But, like, the PHLY people, to my knowledge, have not been on 97.5 or WIP. Like, for whatever reason, the way that that went down, not only did they seem to burn the bridge with Beasley, but it looks like Odyssey had no interest either. It's just weird. It's just a very interesting thing. So, again, we bring it back. Gargano starts Thursday. I'm going to be monitoring the numbers because that ultimately is what I think is going to matter. It's going to give you a legitimate idea of if there is legs to that show, if there are legs to that being a live show, if there are legs to that after the fact, like are people going back and consuming that content on YouTube 12 hours later, 16 hours later, we'll have a better idea of it because we'll be able to see it. We'll be able to actually see it in real time. So much of sports radio is the Nielsen rating. And like as Kincaid has talked about a bunch of times before on this show and on the site, you're talking about a few meters. And like the probably the more accurate number or like the one that maybe you want to make the pitch could be more accurate if it's refined is the streaming number because you can monitor a device. Like there are more devices that are actively trying to access the stream. Because there's so much smoke and mirrors around ratings for radio, being able to actually see what a concurrent number is, a live number on one platform at least is, like that's going to be big. I think ultimately for PHLY's success, this thing with Gargano has to work. And it's going to have to see that YouTube subscriber base probably double, if not triple, by the end of this year. Like I would say if by the end of 2024, if you're still hovering around, I think it's like 15,000 subscribers, that would not be great. Now, if you're at 30, 45, if you get to like 80, if you get to 100,000 subscribers, then it's clear that the Gargano hire and having to wait for him and him being kind of like the central point for all of it was truly worth it. If not, I don't know. I don't know what the business model is at that point. If that doesn't lead to like exponential growth, then I honestly don't know. And again, I wish all the people over there well. I hope everybody succeeds. I think that like in the Philly media landscape, there's probably enough space to have a PHLY, to have the Athletic, to have the Inquirer, to have Crossing Broad, which is like, you know, its own thing, and to have like some of the other blogs that kind of do Crossing Broad adjacent things. Like I want everybody to be successful. I don't harbor ill will to these people. I hope that everybody does succeed because media jobs across the country are just kind of disappearing left and right. And so we'll see how it works out, but I don't know. I want to know in the comments, somebody drop in the comments, how many people do you think will tune into Gargano's show on Thursday? Are we talking 100 people? Are we talking 200 people? Do we think he's going to get 1,500? Are we going to see like a 3,000 concurrent number? I just want to know. Drop it in the comments below. I want to see how it goes. I have to imagine that 9 o'clock when it hits is going to be a decent enough number. And then the goal obviously is going to be to build on that in the first hour, because you think that by word of mouth, through texting, through Twitter, through everything else, that in that first hour, you should see probably at least a 2x of whatever the initial number is. It's like whisper down the lane. By 10 o'clock a.m. on Thursday, you should have a very good idea of what that listener appetite is. And we'll see how it works out. And again, I wish everybody the best, but we'll see. I am not convinced that his listenership is going to go in droves. I'm just not totally convinced. Nat Marlowe with a good question. Do you really want everyone to succeed, Russ? Yes, despite the fact that there have been bad blood things in the past with some of the folks over there. I do want people to succeed. I think it's just because I'm becoming an old man and I have kids, and you think about, like, you only get so many years to do stuff that you enjoy doing, and, like, if you don't enjoy it, you should go find something else to do if you can. I want people to be successful because I think ultimately it's that idea of the rising tide lifts all ships. What's this? Craig pulled this up, by the way. I am not going out of both sides of my mouth here, all right? Craig trying to cause controversy here while I'm saying I hope that everybody does well. Craig brings up Ford being miserable in the YouTube comments. So anyway, I do think that the rising tide lifts all ships. I think that it could potentially be a good thing. If it doesn't work, then you're talking about that finite number of writer jobs already being cut back, right? Because I think the Athletic cut back. They don't have a Sixers writer, right? If somebody can clarify with me. I know that Kevin Kurz is, you know, doing a really good job with the Flyers beat, but, like, they definitely cut back on some of the local writers' jobs that they had available. So if for whatever reason, if PHLY didn't work and all those people ended up out of a job, where do they go? You know, maybe it's another venture capital thing that starts up and all those people go over there. Does the Athletic try to bring some of them back? Does the Inquirer get do they get a VC firm to come in with some money to try to bring some of those people back to, like, the legacy media and try to make the Inquirer a thing again? Like, I don't know. But that's why I'm saying I want people to be successful. I want it to work because those jobs are so limited. And if it doesn't work, then there are fewer jobs out there for people to do good work. Okay. I'm now done with that part. Now, there's one other thing that I wanted to get to. And obviously, it's the thing that I'm most closely tied to right now. And that's the Flyers are kind of in the midst of a playoff run. And I say kind of because the standings, which not that long ago looked very favorable to the Flyers, are getting a little bit trickier. And the Eastern Conference standings are getting a little bit trickier. You know, there was a time where we saw the Detroit Red Wings really hitting the skids, and they've gone 3-7-0 over their last 10 games, and where we had for a long time thought, hey, five of the playoff teams are going to come from the Atlantic Division and only three are going to come from the Metro. You have to be that third team if you're the Flyers because you're not catching the Rangers, you're not catching the Hurricanes. Whoever's third in the Met is going to be the team to make the playoffs. Well, the Red Wings kind of hit the skids, and then that kind of opened up the possibility, oh, okay, maybe you could do 4-4. Like, maybe four will come from the Atlantic, four will come from the Metropolitan Division. And all of a sudden, things have really heated up in a meaningful way. The Flyers right now, entering Tuesday's game against the New York Rangers, have 81 points. They've played 72 games, okay? The Red Wings, who have been on a free fall of sorts in the Atlantic Division, have 78 points in 71 games. So they still have a game in hand on the Flyers. More important is the rest of the Metro. Flyers, 81 points in 72 games. Two spots behind them are the New York Islanders, who, despite the fact that they have a piss-poor minus 27 goal differential, despite the fact that they have picked up 15 loser points, 15 points in overtime losses or shootout losses, they are only 6 points back of the Flyers. They have a game in hand. What's really concerning is the team right behind the Flyers, Alex Ovechkin's Washington Capitals. They're only 2 points behind the Flyers with two games in hand. And the Flyers and Capitals, if you haven't looked at this yet, and I hope you have, especially if you are a Flyers fan, the Flyers and Capitals play one more time this season, and it happens to be the last game of the year. It'll be the final game at home. Final game of the regular season is here against those Washington Capitals. Now, again, if Detroit continues to fall off, and if the Flyers get hot, and the Caps are hot, and the Islanders are still in the mix, all right, like, this could get really weird. It could get really ugly. The Islanders part of it is especially interesting because the Flyers play the Islanders next Monday, a week, exactly a week from today. They host the Islanders. the rest of their stretch, like the rest of their regular season, we are down to the final 10 games of the year. Flyers take on the Rangers at Madison Square Garden on Tuesday night. Then they're at Montreal. They're home against the Blackhawks on Saturday. They're home against the Islanders on Monday. They have they're on the road against the Sabres. Then they're on the road against the Blue Jackets. They're on the road again against Montreal. They're on the road again against the Rangers. And then they come home for the final two against the Devils, who were supposed to be above them in the Met. And then those Capitals. So things are really, really tricky. Now, the game against the Rangers is a huge one, because this Flyers team has not fared well against the Rangers in recent years. This team desperately could use a win to get the monkey off their back and believe that they can beat the Rangers. That's its own thing. After that, you have got to pick up significant points. You've got to get 2 points against the Canadiens both times you play them. That team is dreadful. That team has one of the worst goal differentials in the league at minus 50. They've got 64 total points on the year. They're a piss-poor team. You have got to pick up 4 points across those two games. You're going to play Columbus. Columbus is even worse, minus 55 goal differential. They have even fewer points at 58. That has to be 2 points. So if there's like one thing that you can maybe hang your hat on if you're a Flyers fan, it's that there are some potential gimme games. There are some potential easy games. And I run the risk of saying easy and getting burned, because this Flyers team still is overperforming what their talent is. They should be able to make the playoffs. It's a favorable schedule. They've now gotten through most of this really bad slog that, by the way, started off horrifically, okay? When we talked at the beginning of March, it was, all right, you have to play a really tough stretch where you're going to be in Florida. They lost that game. Where they were going to be at Tampa. They lost that game 7-0. They had an easy schedule game that ended up almost becoming a loss against the Sharks at home. They lost at home to the Maple Leafs. They lost on the road to the Bruins in a game that they had a lead, lost a lead, had a lead, lost a lead, got kind of blown out, fought back in the third period, ultimately lost that one. Then they flipped it. They beat the Maple Leafs at home. They kept it competitive with the Hurricanes. They beat the Bruins at home. But then, last night, they lose a 4-1 game to the Panthers in a game where a competent backup goalie gets you through that game. But a competent backup goalie the Flyers do not have. Because Felix Sandstrom gave up 4 goals last night. One was an empty netter. But like, he gave up 2 very weak goals that absolutely are ones that he should have had. And you were up against a former goalie from your organization, Anthony Stolarz, Stoli the goalie, and he played magnificently. I mean, realistically, if you watch that entire game last night, it was really clear the Flyers were a couple of shots, like a couple of excellent Stoli saves away from a tie game, probably getting a point in overtime. And then you let the chips fall where they may in the extra session when Torts typically likes to put out his fourth line, you know? But that wasn't like a horrific loss. It was a horrific goalie performance that led to a loss. And after the game, and Craig, I think we have this video queued up, at least I hope so, Torts did what Torts has done quite a bit this year. Torts had a very short press conference with the media. Only 3 questions were asked. Anthony Sanfilippo was not there for this. So this wasn't like Torts got triggered by seeing Ant's big dome down in the press room. That's not what happened here. Ant was nowhere to be found. Torts had 3 questions asked to him, and let's get to it.
Felix Sandstrom wasn't too happy with his performance. He just felt like he missed a couple there. Did you feel like he could have given you some more subs?
That was question number 3. So Jordan Hall, NBC Sports Philly, mentions the fact that Felix Sandstrom in the locker room after the game said that he should have had a couple of those goals. He feels bad. He had a bad performance. He should have made those saves. Torts just looks at Jordan Hall, kind of taps the desk with the hand in the cast, looks at him, says nothing, walks off. Another short press conference from Torts. Kind of is what it is at this point. This is his thing. Do I think it's a good look? No. I think it's like the fun thing if you're a fan that you go, oh, see that? Yeah, he hates Felix Sandstrom. Dude, so do I. I don't like Felix Sandstrom either. He cost him the game. However, Sandstrom is your backup until Kolasov is able to maybe get his visa and come over. Okay? So, like, actively shitting on the guy isn't going to help. It's not going to help him be better. It's not going to help his psyche after he feels like he let the team down. This is what Torts does. Do I agree with it? No. Do I think it's a smart thing to do? No. Do I think that this is going to be the thing that, like, lights the fire under Felix Sandstrom and turns him into a Vezina winner? No, I certainly don't. I think it was just, like, another one of those, you know, that's what he does. It's the trick. That's the thing that he's done with a few guys this year. And, like, maybe the next time Felix Sandstrom gets in the lineup, I don't know, people are going to be like, oh, see, well, Torts kind of embarrassed him publicly. And then he went out and he did well. You know, he did that with Morgan Frost. He dealt with Bobby Brink. He dealt with Sean Couturier, you know. So, I don't know, man. That's what I'm seeing. You know, Torts, he's pushing all the right buttons there, you know. I don't see it. It's fine. It is what it is. Torts walks off. I have to tell you something that happened after the game, and I alluded to it on Twitter today, but I'm leaving the game last night, and I go out this gate between Wells Fargo Center and the Link, and there's I'm held up by the security guard, and an SUV goes past me. And so then I come in behind the SUV and I'm getting ready to turn to go towards 95. Unexpectedly, the SUV in front of me flips into reverse. There's not a lot of distance between me and this SUV. I do maintain a respectable distance just for the sake of argument here. But I see this SUV go into reverse and I freak out. So I'm driving stick, so I go to go in reverse, and I kind of tap back a little bit. And this SUV kind of, right, goes back and kind of swerves around me. And I'm about to motherfuck this person. I'm about to, like, let them hear a little bit. Let the rustache fly a little bit, right? And I look, and who is in the car? Who's in the SUV? All I can say is that if he had hit me with his car, it certainly would have been a silly story. It was John Tortorella. Now, why did Torts almost hit my car? Is it because he hates me and he hates Anthony? And maybe he hates Bundy? No, he was swerving and going in reverse because he must have missed it as he was coming out. But there was an entire line of people with their flyer stuff. And I believe he took pictures and was doing autographs. That's my assumption. I didn't stay to wait. I was mad enough that I almost got hit. But he did pull back to that group of people. So there's your big thing, everybody. Like, there's your big story. So should I have let Torts hit my car? Would that have made for a good way to get him on Snow the Goalie? Maybe. Well, here's the real question. Would he do Snow the Goalie if Ant's not there? It's a question that Ant has not asked. It's a question that I may be close to asking because I think it'd be really funny. He doesn't want to answer Ant's questions, but will he answer mine? Will he answer Bundy's questions? I don't know. We'll find out. Maybe we'll find out. We're not. Probably not. Last thing is something that happened over the weekend. We had Danny Briere on Snow the Goalie on the Press Row show on Saturday, and we talked to him about Torts' decision to scratch Sean Couturier, the captain, who was only a month into his tenure as captain when Torts took him out of the lineup for back-to-back games. And Briere's comments were interesting. I would encourage you to go over to the Snow the Goalie YouTube channel where we took the interview off of the Press Row show, put it on its own little segment, but it got picked up by a couple national outlets. And a big part of it was Briere admitting that, yeah, Torts and company, they really did use Sean Couturier a lot. They maybe wore him down. They maybe played him a little bit too much early in the season, and then it's catching up to him physically. Briere also admitted that Couturier hasn't been good enough in the last month, that, you know, if you're really going meritocracy, like, he probably, like, there was a good chance that he should have come out of the lineup because of his play. But he did mention at one point in it, and I don't know if Kincaid transcribed this part or not, but when we asked him about if he supported the decision, he referred to what Tortorella did as a tactic. And my honest read on it was Briere, as a player evaluator, as a GM, probably looked at it and said, you know, if it weren't for the fact that the guy's wearing the C, or if it weren't for the fact that I had previously played with this guy, I probably also would have thought that maybe he did need to come out of the lineup. But I think that it's really hard still to separate yourself from that. Because if you remember, and Ant, I think, brought this up on the show, but Couturier lived with Briere and his family when he first came into the league. It's like a pretty normal thing that if a young guy makes the roster, he doesn't have the money right off the bat to go get his own place. He's living in a country that he wasn't born in, like the works. You try to create more of that community feel, that community, like the culture building thing. You try to, as a veteran player, bring a young guy in and make them feel more comfortable. Whoa, what is this? What is this view, Craig? We've got the blurb over on the side. Look at that. Craig trying out new camera stuff here. Wow, on Crossing Broadcast. No wonder he gets $275,000 to do this job. Anyway, he wants me to highlight the fact because Ford was really upset earlier that he couldn't find it. He didn't know what the reference was to. That Ford was actually referenced at the very bottom of the story because Kincaid, I guess, thought that that was a good place for it, was that early in the story, he said that, you know, his aunt, or Sherlock Sanfilippo, Bundy, and Russ, the white Marcus Hayes Joy, and gave Ford a shout-out in the story. So there you go. Kincaid really going to bat for Ford. I don't know what's going on there. I don't know if there's a budding bromance between Kincaid and Ford, but that's not something you see a lot on crossingbroad.com. You don't typically see the shout-outs like that in the written form. So I don't know, guys. I really don't know. So anyway, that I think is where we're at. I think that's, Couturier's been back in the lineup. He's looked okay. They're not putting him in a first-line role. There were rumors that maybe Tortorella was upset with his pace of play, and that might be why he's playing bottom 6 minutes now. I don't know. Ultimately, what I do know is that if you are trying to make the playoffs, if that is a thing that you're actively trying to do, which clearly they are, there are not 12 forwards that are better than Sean Couturier for this team down the stretch and going into the playoffs. He needs to play. He's got to find whatever semblance of a game he has at this point in the year. And as they play these last 10 games, he's going to be critical. And if he's able to reestablish himself, if he's able to find not sulky form Sean Couturier, but he's able to find some semblance of that guy, it'll be huge. It'd be absolutely huge for this team. They desperately need it. They desperately need him to be back in some significant capacity if they're going to try to not only make the playoffs, but maybe pull a first-round upset. Would I put my money on that? No. Should you? I don't know. But if you're interested in that, you go over to crossingbroad.com and check out the PA Online Sportsbook section of the site. Go check out some of the offers that are out there. So, Alex Day, thank you for calling me out on my shenanigans here at the end of the show that I didn't mention that Eagles legend Quez Watkins signed with Pittsburgh. I am sorry, Alex. I will try to be better and do better next time. I will try. Quez Watkins, we hardly knew ye. Actually, we got to know you a little bit too much. Quez Watkins. Was he a dollar store, wish.com, Nelson Aguilar, 610-632. All right, time for us to go. Everybody have a great rest of your day. Crossing Broadcast will be live on Thursday, and we will see who's going to be the guest on Thursday. Kevin Kincaid will be running the lead chair. Who's he going to get? You're going to have to stay tuned to find out. A big thank you to everybody who tuned in live on YouTube, on Facebook, and on Twitter. If you haven't done so, go subscribe to the Crossing Broad YouTube channel. And then, of course, if you haven't done so already, go follow the account over on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter if you want, at JoyOnBroad. And if you're in the podcast feed, if you're listening to this way after the fact, maybe even 3 weeks from now, you're just getting caught up on all the episodes in the feed. I don't know why you would, but if you do, thank you for listening. You can find the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, wherever you get your podcasts. I will point out, if you're a Google Podcast subscriber, you got to pick a different app. Google Podcasts, I think, either has gone away or is going away in the next week. So if you're still on Google Podcasts, I'm so sorry to inform you, you have to pick a new app or you will get no podcasts. No podcasts for you. Time to go. Craig, a big thank you to you on the other side of the glass. Thank you to Craig's cat for walking across the keyboard. Thank you to my children in the house who did not come down and interrupt their dad during a show. And a big, big, big thank you to everybody who tuned in here on Crossing Broadcast, everybody's number one favorite Philadelphia sports podcast. We'll talk to all of you again on Thursday.